Discover breakthrough technology with Masimo Rainbow Pulse CO-Oximetry. Featuring SpHb non-invasive continuous hemoglobin monitoring and PVI, a non-invasive dynamic indicator of fluid responsiveness, the Rainbow Pulse CO-Oximetry platform is designed to help support blood and fluid management initiatives without additional equipment or setup. Visit Masimo.com to learn more.
Hi, this is Evan Karish, Editor-in-Chief of Anesthesiology, with some highlights from the July 2021 issue, as selected by our journal editors. This month's podcast, I'll be exploring new information about post-procedure pain relief, managing pregnant patients with cardiac conditions, the evidence base for anesthesia practice, and the challenges with anesthesia during interplanetary spaceflight. We'll also discuss some basic science insights and new clinical reviews that will aid your practice. And I'll close this month with an overview of an editorial related to authorship in scholarly publications. Let me begin with a systematic review of evidence supporting the current North American and the European perioperative care guidelines for anesthesiologists. A review team that was led by Dr. Andres Lacerna of the University of Rochester School of Medicine in New York examined the various levels of evidence for anesthesia-based recommendations from major North American and European anesthesiology societies. They reviewed 60 guidelines with more than 2,000 recommendations. They found that level of evidence A, which was defined as consistent evidence from well-performed randomized clinical trials or overwhelming evidence of some other form, supported only 16% of recommendations overall and only 19% of strong recommendations. In contrast, level of evidence C, which was defined as evidence from observational studies, unsystematic clinical experience, or randomized clinical trials with serious flaws, supported half of the recommendations overall and half of the strong recommendations. The proportion of recommendations that were supported by level of evidence A compared with level of evidence C did not increase when guidelines were revised. The authors said that their findings highlight the need for more effort to increase the quality of evidence behind clinical decision-making in anesthesiology. An editorial which addresses this article notes, however, that sometimes the high-quality evidence hasn't caught up with clinical situations. The editorial adds that even in the absence of adequate randomized controlled trials, other guidance can be useful in clinical practice. Advice from informed experts may be better than no advice at all when clinicians face scenarios that are outside their realm of experience. Check out the full article for free in this month's issue. Let me shift now to an interesting pilot study of peripheral nerve stimulation for postoperative pain. It was conducted by Dr. Brian Ilfeld at the University of California, San Diego, and colleagues. Percutaneous peripheral nerve stimulation is a common technique for treating chronic pain, although its use for postoperative pain management has not been well studied. These investigators compared active peripheral nerve stimulation compared to a sham technique in 66 patients who underwent upper or lower extremity surgery. The patients were randomized to 14 days of electrical stimulation or to sham stimulation. The dual primary outcome measures of the study were the mean value of the average daily pain scores and cumulative opioid consumption in the first 7 postoperative days. The patients who received active nerve stimulation reported an average pain intensity of 1.1 compared to 3.1 for the sham patients. In addition, the median opioid use by active stimulation patients was only 5 milligrams compared to 48 milligrams in the sham patients. The authors concluded that the results suggest that percutaneous peripheral nerve stimulation may be an effective option for postoperative pain management. But they also recognized that the sample size was small and this was a pilot study. The article is available for free in this month's issue. Next, we have a randomized controlled trial of automated nerve monitoring in shoulder arthroplasty. Dr. Jason Chui of the University of Western Ontario and colleagues sought to identify the impact of an automated nerve monitor on minimizing intraoperative nerve injury. They prospectively identified 200 adults who underwent shoulder arthroplasty and randomized them to an intervention group for automated nerve monitoring or a control group for blinded nerve monitoring. The primary outcome of the study was the intraoperative nerve injury burden. The researchers assessed nerve injury burden based on the cumulative duration of nerve alerts from the monitor. Overall, they found no significant difference in nerve alerts between the automated group and the controls. Similarly, they found no significant differences in any of the secondary outcomes, including neurologic deficits and quality of life measures. But they did show in both groups that there were reductions in neurologic deficits and improvement in quality of life measures during the course of the study period. The article is available for free in this month's issue. Our next clinical study examined observed differences in recollection memory in patients treated with midazolam versus ketamine. Researchers led by Dr. Keith Vogt of the University of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, conducted a within-subject crossover study of 26 healthy adults involving sedative doses of midazolam or ketamine compared with saline. They used functional magnetic resonance imaging to identify task-related brain activity in areas of the brain which involve memory, pain, and fear. The participants underwent periodic pain stimulation through an electric nerve stimulator on the left index finger. Midazolam showed an increased functional connectivity to 20 areas of the brain and decreased functional connectivity to 8 areas when compared to saline during the pain experience. In contrast, ketamine showed decreased connectivity to 17 brain areas and increased connectivity to 2 areas. Pain scores were significantly lower with ketamine, but not with midazolam. However, recollection memory was lower with midazolam compared with both ketamine and saline. The findings illustrate the complex neural dynamics of pain and anesthesia and the differences in the pharmacology between midazolam and ketamine. The article is available for free in this month's issue. Our next article describes a retrospective clinical database study looking at the use of tranexamic acid in patients undergoing hip and knee arthroplasties. The investigators found that tranexamic acid was not associated with any increase in complications, regardless of whether the patients were high risk or low risk. Dr. Josh Von Porin of the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai and colleagues reviewed data for more than 700,000 hip and knee arthroplasties that were done from 2013 to 2016. Of these, they identified 3 groups of patients that were considered high risk. The first group included nearly 28,000 patients with a history of venous thromboembolism, myocardial infarction, seizures, or stroke. The second group included about 45,000 patients with kidney disease. And the third group included about 46,000 patients with atrial fibrillation. The co-primary outcomes were blood transfusion and new-onset complications. Approximately half of the patients received tranexamic acid across the three risk groups. Across all three risk groups, patients who received tranexamic acid were significantly less likely to require blood transfusions compared to those who did not receive tranexamic acid. In addition, there was no increase in the odds of composite complications, which included venous thromboembolism, myocardial infarction, seizures, ischemic stroke, or transient ischemic attack. Despite the small sample of high-risk patients relative to those not deemed high-risk, the results showed that tranexamic acid use did not increase the need for transfusions or the risk of ischemic and thromboembolic events. This article is available for free in this month's issue, and check out the related editorial for cautious optimism, tempered with perspective on additional information needed about tranexamic acid. Our next study explores the impact of sevoflurane on sepsis using two mouse models. Sepsis remains a leading cause of mortality in the intensive care setting. Most sedations given intravenously. Sevoflurane demonstrated some protective effects in inflammatory studies, but has not been well studied in sepsis. Dr. Christian Christos Nagamstri of the University Hospital of Tübingen, Germany, and colleagues used mouse models of zymosin-induced peritonitis and fecal-induced peritonitis to assess neutrophil counts and cytokine concentrations. The mice were anesthetized with 2% sevoflurane for 30 minutes after the induction of inflammation. Control mice just received saline. The investigators found that sevoflurane significantly reduced neutrophil counts in peritoneal lavage fluid by lower expression of adhesion molecules. This occurred in wild-type mice with a functional adenosine A2B receptor, but did not occur in adenosine A2B receptor knockout mice. Chimeric mice had no significant protection. For the wild-type mice, sevoflurane also significantly reduced cytokine concentrations and protein extravasation. This article is available for free in this month's issue, and a related editorial explains how bench science and mouse models could ultimately translate into bedside clinical implications for managing excessive inflammation through additional studies of inflammatory response in patients treated with sevoflurane. This month's clinical focus review addresses the challenges of anesthesia and surgery during interplanetary spaceflight. The author, Dr. Matthew Komorowski, and colleagues from the Space Medicine Group of the European Society of Aerospace Medicine and elsewhere identify the key challenges for a crew on the surface of Mars or the Moon when faced with a severe surgical emergency. The most significant risks in space exploration missions are trauma, hemorrhage, shock, and infections. Using the existing literature, they examined various factors related to medical evacuation, telemedicine, the delivery of anesthesia and surgery, and behavioral health and performance. They also analyzed what technologies and futuristic concepts could be useful in a space mission setting and the practice of anesthesia here on Earth. And our comprehensive review this month addresses practical clinical considerations for obstetric anesthesia in women with heart disease. The review was conducted by Dr. Marie-Louise Meng of Duke University and Dr. Catherine Arndt of the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. The two authors emphasize the need to stratify pregnant patients with heart disease according to the cardiac disease etiology and the severity in order to guide not only the choice of hospital type, but also the in-hospital location for optimal delivery and anesthetic management. As cardiovascular disease is currently the leading cause of maternal mortality in women in the United States, these authors emphasize that anesthesiologists treating women with heart disease must be prepared for a range of obstetric and cardiac emergencies, including emergency cesarean delivery, postpartum hemorrhage, and peripartum arrhythmias. They address some specific questions with guidance on issues such as monitoring and intravenous access that may be affected by the presence of heart disease, as well as some guidance for emergencies. Other topics include guidelines for effective labor analgesia and postpartum care. This article is available for free in this month's issue. And finally, I'd like to provide you with a brief overview of an editorial related to authorship and scholarly integrity that appears in this issue. The editorial addresses the qualifications for authorship in anesthesiology and the importance of recognizing the role of collaborators in research and how to do that recognition. It also talks about unacceptable types of authorship. The editorial also addresses salami publication versus the appropriate use of segmented publication and other elements of scientific integrity. All these issues directly relate to the validity and trustworthiness of the articles and the evidence that we publish in anesthesiology. The editorial highlights recent changes to our instructions to authors in an effort to provide information and the rationale behind these modifications. Through continuous review of our standards, we strive to maintain the high standards of quality that our readership expects. Thank you for your interest in and support of anesthesiology and the podcast. I hope the information that we've provided you today helps to guide and improve your clinical practice, and I look forward to sharing more important research with you next month.
Breakthrough technology, breakthrough outcomes. A key study conducted at CHU Limoges Hospital in France demonstrated the value of implementing a hospital-wide goal-directed therapy protocol for blood and fluid management using the Masimo Rainbow Pulse CO-oximetry platform, showing a 33% reduction in 30-day post-surgical mortality. Visit Masimo.com to learn more.